Kurt, welcome to another episode of PBT Extra. How are you doing? A lot has happened. One of the most important things we should note is the passing of Paul Silas, a longtime NBA coach who's inspired so many people and former NBA All-Star and NBA champion. What do you think about his legacy into the game and what he left behind?
And I know his son said this, Stephen, when he spoke to the media Tuesday night, but I can only hope whenever my time comes that people speak as highly of me or half as highly of me as people have of Paul. That, yeah, everybody speaks well when someone passes, but I mean, the genuine affection and appreciation for everybody who knew him as a not just as a player, but as a person was inspiring. I mean, outside of meeting him in passing, I didn't really have any interaction with him, but you could feel his legacy from the people that were talking to him. I don't know if you interacted with him much.
No, I didn't have the pleasure, but like you said, some of these quotes coming out, like LeBron James, he actually started his career in Cleveland w under Paul Silas, and the things that he said, saying he's one of the best human beings that he's ever been around, one of the greatest human beings he's ever been around. And you look at some of the other quotes too from some of the coaching tree that came out of Paul Silas's coaching tree, and they were saying he's like a god to our family. So it's pretty amazing to see the people who are impacted by him so profoundly.
No, it that isn't that ultimately, I mean, don't have to get more, but like, but the legacy you'd rather leave. It's great to be able to leave family. What, maybe you can leave them money or you can leave them some, something else, but that's the legacy. That's the legacy I would want to leave. That kind of kindness to others.
Yeah, and I found the quote. It was Steve Clifford, coach of Charlotte. He said, "For my family, he's a god. He's larger than life." So yeah, just being able to open the door for so many people, including your son. And then this is one thing, by the way, Kurt. And then we don't have to spend too much time on this, but one thing that I find very interesting in just Black culture generally, and just something that keeps coming up, is a parent has a dream. And then the children get to live that dream, right? And it's so interesting. You look at his journey, Paul Silas, how he had that head coaching job, then he had to wait, I think it was 10 years, 15 years,
Yeah, somewhere 7 or 10,
for
yeah,
the
something like
second
that.
coaching opportunity, right? A very long time. And now his son, Steven Silas, is a head coach, and getting to wait and see his son become head coach and live that journey with him. And Steven's Coach Silas's comments to the media, just being able to bounce ideas and ask questions off of his dad and engage with him as two head coaches, like how special that relationship is, father son. It's a really cool thing that you see in Black culture kind of pop up over and over again, and how the generations get to share a dream. And so that I always thought that was a really touching story about the Silases.
Yeah, that's a well phrased.
So moving on to business, the business of basketball, I wanted to get your take on Cade Cunningham. Season-ending injury. He's having surgery. He only played in 12 games this season, but he's been very productive. A shade under 20 points per game, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. What have you seen from him this season after a very impressive rookie year? Do you think he took a step forward?
I think he was starting to, yeah. I mean, there was a lot on his plate with what was a young team, right? I mean, they did get Bogdanovich. They had a couple of veterans, and they thought they might be able going into the season that maybe they could sniff around the play-in, like if things went well. But it was going to be about Cade's growth, and to me, he looked like a guy who had taken that step as a leader. I don't know if the it showed up in like counting stats, but in terms of his control of the game, his floor generalmanship. I'm going with that. That's a word. His floor generalmanship is, I thought he was really playing well. I mean, you saw him. I mean, what'd you think of him?
I thought the Detroit Pistons, and we mentioned this a while back. I can't remember how many weeks ago. We got to talk about them briefly. I have a feeling we won't talk about them again for the rest of the season.
Until we
But
talk about the lottery, unfortunately, yeah.
yes, unfortunately. But there was a moment when I saw them play. I think it was the Cavs, really tough, and I thought that was interesting because I thought I could see a spark of the future there. And to me, this team is long. They kind of have like this. This unbridled athleticism, like a group of just these maverick horses, which is very exciting. And I do agree, Cade Cunningham, he's always been very poised. I mean, even in college at Oklahoma State, like super poised, super focused, and to have that maturity on the floor, even going down to the final shot every time, like ice in his veins. That translates very well to franchise player, but it's a different game. The NBA, the leap is so massive. And I was starting to see these flashes, not for 4 quarters, Kurt, but just
No.
flashes from that Detroit team of, okay, with a little bit of discipline, this core there, especially with the addition of Jaden Ivey, this could be interesting.
Yeah,
And
and
now
then
we're
they
gonna have to wait, and it's just we're gonna have to wait to see it all gel. But I thought they were heading in the right direction prior to this injury.
I'm with you. Isaiah Stewart in the middle, like they had a really talented young group, and it was just a matter of watching them develop, and Cade seemed to be, I would say his game was maturing the fastest, but his game was always a little bit that way, right? It wasn't just Jaden Ivey is just blowing by you with his athleticism. Cade Cunningham's the hesitation moves and the control of the game and the passing and the seeing things and kind of playing at his own pace, which is kind of rare for rookies and young players to have that pace where they're not going to be rushed by you. And so I'm glad he's, look, I don't know. Did you ever have stress fractures? We've dealt with it in our house with my wife. I don't know if.
I honestly can't remember my injury history. I know I broke something. I think I broke something in my hand. But yeah, nothing like, because his is a left shin. I didn't have any
Yeah.
deal.
Yeah. And we're running on a hardwood floor. That's a big deal. But with my wife's a runner, she had a stress fracture in her hip. It's something that they put in screws, and once it gets reattached and stable, it's strong and you're fine, but you can't mess with it because it could be, you don't want it to become a lingering, ongoing issue. So I'm glad he's getting it taken care of because he's such a special player and such a part of them going forward that it's, I'm just glad it's getting done because it doesn't mess with their future. I'll tell you, a lot of people around the league now, Corey, are talking about their present. What do you do now? Do you become sellers?
Yeah, I don't know. Right now, you have an interesting lottery coming up, and you mentioned it at the top of,
Yeah.
at the beginning of our conversation about Cade Cunningham. I think it's hard to not talk about the Detroit Pistons now without looking at the lottery.
Yeah.
So in my mind, you think, okay, what would the Detroit Pistons, like, who would they sell? I think, like, a lot of those young guys, it's all, like, for me, it's kind of like, what's that word? It's perspective, right? Like,
Yeah.
they have young guys that I think are going to be good someday in 4 or 5, 6 years, but like that perspective jump is kind of frightening, I think, if I'm, because that's what the problem with the draft is right now for so many NBA teams. It's like you think they're going to be good, but you don't know until 6 or 7 years in, until that second contract. And so I think right now it's a real big gamble. But I do, so I don't know what they would, I don't know what they would, who they would sell, and if they would get anything of value in return.
Yeah, the rumors have been, I mean, they're definitely, I think Nerlens Noel will probably be on the move. He kind of makes a fair amount, almost 10 million, just a little shy. So, but I'm not sure how that, but he's a guy who could come in if he's healthy and help, give you some front court depth, right? Like Nerlens Noel is a solid player. There was speculation about Sadiq Bey. I don't know if they'd give up on him or it kind of, I guess, would depend on what people ask. The big one, though, the question everybody's asking is, will they move Bojan Bogdanovic, who has been fantastic for them, their leading scorer? He's a veteran. He's not on their long-term timeline, but if, and there's been pushback out of reports out of Detroit that they're not going to move him, that, hey, we want to be in the play-in mix next. Like, we want to take a step forward next year, whoever we draft, however that works out. We want a solid leading veteran in the locker room like Bojan, who teaches these guys how to be professional and comes to work every night and scores points. And we don't want to give that up. Maybe that's true. And maybe that's posturing. Maybe that's them saying, oh, we'll trade him, but your protected pick isn't good enough, Lakers. We want an unprotected pick. Or, I think there would be a number of teams. So that's going to be the interesting one. I think that they're comfortable. Remember, they just extended him at the start of the season. So I think they're comfortable keeping him. And if you're going to trade for him, they're going to want they're going to want something of quality in return. They're not taking your bad contracts back. So it'll be
True.
interesting to see. I can tell you this much, Corey. Bogdanovich rumors until February 9th, man.
It's interesting you bring that up because, I was thinking about the young core, right? Because I was thinking about like that type of venture prospect, like an angel investor almost. But the Bogdanovich question is an interesting question. I will posit this one argument that I think is interesting. Like, if you're on a bad team, somebody has to score. And I think that you can inflate the value of a lot of NBA players just purely by virtue of being the leading scorer or a leading figure on a bad team, because someone has to get those points. So I understand, like, this is almost a catch 22, right? Because on one hand, I do agree. I think he does look very good, and I think that the trade value is there, right? As far as like if you're going to deal anyone, it would make sense to deal him. Once again, I don't necessarily know what you're gonna if you give up that. Like, you would just get more young players, right? And you would have a whole sea of young players. Like, I think the problem with Detroit is they don't need more young players.
No,
So.
I think actually, I think you're onto something there, and I the example might be the process Sixers. I still think you need a veteran in the room that shows the young players, hey, this is the work, just how to be a professional, right? Like, I'm showing up to work every day. I'm working out, before games or after games. I'm getting my treatment. The process of being a professional. Ricky Rubio was doing that in Cleveland with their young guys, and they loved him. I think you need that kind of voice, that kind of, I don't know, voice. It doesn't have to be necessarily vocal. It doesn't have to be a Draymond Green or something, but you need somebody there to be the example for these young guys of hey, this is how you take care of your body. You've got to start eating right. You've got to start working out on off days. You've got to, like, all this kind of stuff. You got to work on your sleep and recovery, all that kind of stuff. That I think having somebody doing that by example and then playing well really helps.
Yeah, especially and you have to think in the NBA. I know these are big numbers, but 2 years, $39.1 million. That's the extension you mentioned. $20 million a year, I think that's worth it when you're looking at guys like Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey and Sadiq Bey. If you believe as a franchise, if you believe that you want these guys to be your core and your future, and you do, like there's how many teams we can name, a bunch of teams that have are basically like we talked about before, like Lord of the Flies, young people leading young people, you're for better or for worse, and a lot of times it's for worse. For $20 million a year, that's almost worth having a veteran who like can teach you to be professional. I think the Heat probably is the great example with you keeping Udonis Haslem for however many years, just to like, and that's worth the paycheck. That's worth $20 million a year for Detroit, I personally think. Versus, like I said, like it's an inflated value being someone who's who's balling on a bad team. And I think other teams in the league understand that concept that someone has to score, and these numbers aren't real numbers in that sense. I know they're real because they're on the stat sheet, but they're not real as in Bogdanovich is not going to do that for your team if you're the Boston Celtics or whoever. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not going to translate to a great team all the time. And I would say actually very rarely does it translate. So I think in that sense, it's probably in Detroit's best interest to just see it as a $20 million a year player development play.
They very well might do that, which would be.
But you never know. Rumors are rumors.
And look, I love Bogdan. I mean, yeah, it's like they may love him. Everybody has a price. I mean, outside of your Jason Tatums of the world, like in theory, somebody could step up with a number where you're like, or with a trade where you're like, well, we got to do that. So we'll see.
We'll see. So I want to get your thought process of all these awards, because there have been a lot of renaming of awards, things shifting,
Redesigns.
redesign. Yeah, the redesign is pretty cool, huh? Like, I love that Michael
Did you see?
Jordan.
You got to see them, right? Like, most of them are a silhouette, basically. I'm trying to think of the right word. Silhouette, sort of the player in crystal, encased in crystal. So you've got a guy, the Olajuwon Defensive Award is he's def in a defensive position, and it mimics Olajuwon. Everyone except Jordan. We did a whole story on this. And the designer talked about it. Jordan didn't want the MVP award to look like him because he wanted the player to be able to see themselves in it. So it's You need to. We wrote the story, and you can find there was a longer interview, I think, at the Charlotte Observer with the his name is Mark Smith, the designer, who was one of the Jordan brand designers. Really interesting. You would find it interesting, Corey, because it's an interesting description of how the artist saw this and what he wanted it to represent, and what Jordan wanted it to represent.
Yeah, the how closely they work together, I think that is really cool. You know, that virtue of being able to work with Michael Jordan and Jordan Brand, I suppose, to make this MVP trophy and like all the symbolism behind it, in addition to what you said. But also I like at the beginning, at the bottom, the foundation is all rough hewn, and then it gets refined on the way up and to this crystal, the concept of, you know, the journey of a player from going into the league as a unrefined product to becoming a crystal, the best, the best. I thought it was pretty interesting. There are questions though about, you know, the, I don't want to use the word, I guess, justification, but, you know, why these names to these trophies, especially, I understand Michael Jordan is, you know, quite arguably the greatest of all time. And for many people, he is the greatest of all time, but Kareem Abdul-Jabbar does have six MVPs and Michael Jordan does have five. So, you know, where do you stand on these arguments?
By the way, I just like that I can now say Kareem has the most Jordans. I'm not even like
Pretty
it's
funny.
kind of a weird. I don't know. I wasn't as I know that they're trying to harken back to history. I was less. I don't know. I in some ways less excited or moved by that than some. I think some people really got into it, but there were a few that shook my. John Havlicek never won the Sixth Man of the Year. It didn't exist, but he never won Sixth Man of the Year. And what about Kevin McHale? Like, he won a
Or
couple as a
Frank
Celtic, right?
Ramsey. That's where I was thinking, because Frank Ramsey, like Red Auerbach, basically he was the one who created the concept of a six man.
So it was. I thought that that one was a little strange. And they created a new award, the Jerry West Clutch Player Award, which.
What does that mean?
I don't know. And I have had this. I have been a voter in the past. I have been the past 4 or 5 years. I am hopeful that the NBA allows me the responsibility and honor and privilege of doing that again. And this lack of sleep and stress it causes me every year. I take it far too seriously and spend way too much time on those. But yeah. But I was talking with somebody about that. Like, I'm not quite sure. Like, how are you defining clutch? The coaches are going to pick a pool of players. I don't know how big that pool is. And then a media panel, and I don't know if it's a separate media panel or the media panel that votes on MVP and Rookie of the Year and everything. I don't know what. I guess my question is just I've got to think about it. Like, is that just it's not just making game-winning shots. What Damian Lillard does, what Luka Doncic does in the clutch is create those shots for themselves and others. Like, and how do you factor that in? And is it fair to a guy on a really good team who's, you know, I'm not in that many clutch games because we keep blowing people out. Like, I'm not even thinking, I'm not sure. What does it mean to you? Like, what I'm not, I'm still, I'm gonna have to spend some time thinking about this.
Yeah, you know, I think the should I guess in traditional sense of what does the word clutch mean, it's like, okay, well, we have a last second shot, who do we want to take that shot? You know, I feel like that is pretty universal across all basketball. You know, it's well in middle school, who's taking the shot, college, high school, you know, pros, Olympics, you know who where the ball is going. And even though you know Michael Jordan's gonna take that shot, you know, to win the finals, you can't stop him. Like that's the definite, or like, you know, Larry Bird, like he's gonna tell you, I'm actually gonna catch it here. I'm gonna do two dribbles and shoot off the elbow for this game winner, you know? And like try to stop me if you can. Like to me, those guys are perfect examples of clutch. Obviously, Jerry West, like the only guy to ever win finals MVP and lose, which is a dubious distinction, but you understand, like I think that finals, I mean, it's crazy. He was averaging like 40 points a game. Like it was unbelievable. But anyways, my point is that like with clutch, I think it comes down to, you know, I'm getting the ball. Can you stop me? Good luck, you know? But I think there's actually a stat, like if you go to NBA.com, you can look at all the stats, and I
Yeah,
love
no, you
the
can.
page, and they actually have one called clutch and like clutch stats. So
Clutch
it's like,
stats for teams and clutch stats for players. Their standard breakdown is a game within 5 points in the last 5 minutes, but you can lower those numbers. You can make it last 3 in the last 3 minutes, last minute of play, and within 3 points or 1 point. Like, you can kind of play around with that. And I think that helps, I think, define it too a little bit. But I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. For me, it's even the teams that run the Utah Jazz, and I think this was part of their playoff issues, like under the previous, I don't want to say regime, but like the way that the Gobert-Mitchell era was, they had a great system. They ran this system. That system in the final 2 minutes of a tight game is Donovan Mitchell. It is, right? Like, and is he good? And Donovan has proven in so far in Cleveland to kind of be up to that. But like, that's becomes who it is. It's like, I can start to take away when I really defend, I can block some of this stuff off. So how are you still getting a bucket? And if I get the ball to Kevin Durant against the Nets late in the game, how are you going to stop Kevin Durant from getting that bucket?
The answer is you're not. You know, like same with, like, I was watching all the Spurs, you know, huge Spurs fan, go Spurs go. By the way, some big wins for the Spurs.
Just good one out there. Week. Quality
some
wins.
Some good wins, last second wins against some good. I mean, some, you know,
Vassell. I'm telling you, there. I like Vassell. I like Vassell.
Yeah, so I'm just going to, you know, every once in a while, I just got to throw in the San Antonio connection while we have it. So good, go Spurs. But I will say, I was watching, they're doing a really interesting thing. It's the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
And they're doing this, like, there's this huge, like, mini series, and it's all about Spurs history, which is great for me because I watch it and call my dad. So it's like, imagine, like, watching a 30 for 30, like, every week, and then calling your dad and then, like, finding out, like, all the other stuff too, which is really cool. So but one of them was about Captain Lee, and that was James Silas. And talk about, like, clutch, you know, because I didn't get to really watch him play.
Yeah.
This was, you know, like Dallas Chaparral's, like, ABA-NBA merger, and he was injured in the NBA. So, like, he didn't really get to showcase, you know, like, the kind of player he was. But they called him Captain Late because he took over games late. You know, like, this was – I think John Morant is a perfect example of that as a young player in the NBA right now, where, you know, fourth quarter, overtime, like, Ja's taking every shot. He's going to score 12 straight points, and he's going to win. You know, like, he's going to win the game for you. Like, that was James Silas back in the day. So, like, those kind of players for me, like, embody what clutch is. Of course, Larry Bird is on that list, and Michael Jordan, of course, like, has to be, like, number one. But
Kobe,
you always think about, like, clutch is that.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And by the way, not every team does it. Not every player does that. You get the Bucks in the clutch. Giannis is setting picks for Chris Middleton. Middleton is the guy with the ball in his hands, not always shooting it, but he's the playmaker for them in the clutch. It's not Giannis anymore.
And that's a really interesting point, too, going to the most clutch player, because it doesn't always have to be the franchise player. Like, in that scenario, you're right. Chris Middleton has the ice in the veins. He's taking the last shot. Remember that Cleveland team that won the championship? Kyrie took the last shot.
Yeah.
You know, like, so Kyrie was that clutch player for them. So, yeah, I do think that's a really interesting way to think about, like, the award. It kind of opens up. Do you think it opens up to the defensive realm as well? Remember when Bam Adebayo had that incredible block in the playoffs?
I think it'd be hard to win that way. Like, it's, you can get great highlights, and I think I'm going to go blank. There was one this week where somebody won with a block at the rim. Those are great, but I don't know that you could. I don't know that that opportunity would come up often enough where you would be able to say, you know, I'm Mr. Clutch. I'm the clutch winner because every time we were in a clutch situation, I locked down the opposing team's best. There's great plays like that, and it would matter. And by the way, it would really add to your case, by the way, wouldn't it, though? If you had one of those blocks or some of those plays, and by the way, I've also hit a bunch, like, it would add to your case.
That would be like the LeBron James argument. Like, how many times have we seen him fly out of nowhere, pin something against the ball, and then also have 30-something points and all the way to the winning shot, you know? So I think in that sense, it does – there's a lot of elements to this clutch award, which I think is probably the most interesting. Like, the biggest variance, I believe, is like what you're saying. One, how do you define clutch? And then two, I think once you figure it out, there are so many aspects to that award that it could go to, I think, a lot. The pool is, like, you know, I know the coaches are selecting it, but it could be a very interesting group of players, from, like, franchise players to maybe six men type of players to, like, you know, the 1A players. So it's going to be a really interesting group of people.
And you've got to get those guys need help. By the way, like, I've been watching the Mavericks lately. It gets late in the game. People are throwing double and triple teams at Luka. And he is making the right basketball play and passing out of it to guys who aren't finishing. Like, I feel bad for him, but he's like, you're going to have a, if I'm going to load up on LeBron James at the end of the finals game and it leaves Kyrie open, Kyrie's still got to hit the shot, man.
He's still got to hit the shot. Yeah. I also want to mention just a couple more of these, because, like, the whole concept of these awards, you know, I'm not a big award guy. Personally, I don't really understand like ceremony or the awards. That's just kind of that's just me. But
Wait
I
for
do
award
think,
season, baby. I'm just gonna be texting you like, hey, man.
it's just like win the championship, I guess. I'm a very simple dude. It's like, what's the most important thing? The team success. But the individual awards are cool because I think one thing that the NBA is doing a really good job of is reintroducing history. Because I think the
Yeah.
important thing about this time is, and like I said, I'm doing this because of the Spurs as well, as I learn about Spurs history in greater detail and greater depth. We're talking about the internationalization of the game. Most of the best players in the NBA now are becoming more and more international, if not, like the top three or four, probably all international. So because of this, like you end up having, I think, to re-educate not just, of course, domestic fans who are like under the age of 18, like who is Larry Bird, like, but for, a kid growing up in Argentina watching Manu Ginobili's Hall of Fame speech, like now you have a global fan base that you need to reintroduce. Who was Wilt Chamberlain? Did you know that he won the MVP the same year he won Rookie of the Year? Like crazy, like
Yeah.
saying, who is George Mikan, like the first superstar? Like George Mikan, like was the first guy to inspire like Bill Russell. You know what I'm saying? Like these stories of history in the game, like Hakeem Olajuwon, his nickname was the Dream, but he's one of the most like low-key superstars. So like, will this next generation of global fans know who these people are? I think that's why this award timing is so interesting for me. And less about like, like the direct, the direct correlation. Like Jerry West is the logo. He needs to have an award named after him.
By the way, I'm with you on that. I think the league is starting to understand it needs to embrace its history in a way I'm not sure it always has in the past. And I'm not sure, like, baseball's always done a good job of it. I'm not sure if the NFL and every other and other sports have done as well with it.
Yeah, because I think domestically, I think the NBA does a very good job, especially with like the NBA legends, of keeping the former players involved and engaged at a high level. But I do think the international question, because it's not like the All-Star game isn't happening in Mexico City and in Dubai and in Shanghai. You know what I'm saying? The All-Star game's happening in Salt Lake City or in Cleveland, or in LA or New Orleans. So I think that the NBA awards, doing it now and doing it in such a big way, in such a public way, is a great way to engage the global audience and fan base in a way that reintroduces the history to them.
Speaking of awards, I think it's time for Corey's Jukebox, my favorite part of the week where you match a song to, by the way, this week, your player and your team out on the West Coast, the Left Coast, the Best Coast, baby. You're out here this week. So who's up on Corey's Jukebox?
It's so hard to follow that, Kurt. Maybe I should just throw it to you so you can do it. Yeah, but we're going West Coast, correct? So, do I have permission to be completely frank? I just really wanted to get Astor Piazzolla in the pod. I really like Nuevo Tango, and we just needed Piazzolla in the pod. So I kind of was like, okay. We have the song isn't necessarily because it's Adios Nonino. It's not a direct comp. It's more about the vibe of Nuevo Tango. And the reason I chose this one song for the Portland Trailblazers is because Adios Nonino, Astor Piazzolla, who, by the way, like I said, he's like the architect of Nuevo Tango, Argentinian music, and he's a master. He himself said that Adios Nonino was probably the finest tune he's ever written, that there were like angels while he was like, shepherding him while he was writing this tune. So it was just more like this is, characteristic of a masterpiece in a master's mind. So that's why I chose that one song. But it's more about the vibe. And have you ever listened to tango music?
A little, but not as much as you. Now, see, this is another one where you got to just text me the link like you did last week, and
Yeah. So like, Carmen, that one opera, like everyone kind of like understands like some of like the Spanish music or like flamenco because like these one things. Well, like Astor Piazzolla introduced, I think, tango, at least to me. And Nuevo Tango, there are sounds that just don't make sense. Like if you listen to music, that some music is so jarring. I would say like the Indonesian Java court music is pretty jarring. Like Imperial Japan music, like if you listen to like old school Imperial Japan Japanese music, like that is pretty jarring. There are sounds that you just don't normally hear. Scales, like I would say classical Indian music too, is very like,
I've heard that. Yeah, I felt
there
that
are
with Indian
sounds that
music.
just don't like, they don't like exist. It's in like an R kind of Western, like more like American type of musical vocabulary. So like it's very jarring to hear these sounds. And that's what, when I first heard like Piazzolla's music, I was so shook, Kurt. And I think that's kind of when I watch Portland, it's almost like not unrecognizable, but it's so foreign and distinct to me at times, where it's beautiful, but it's also like self-destructive and kind of like jarring. And I think that mixture to me is both intriguing and dismaying. So when I see like Damian Lillard doing what Damian, hitting 11 threes, I'm like, whoa, 38 points. What a performance by him, right? And then you see Anthony Simons like growing. I think he's one of the most, I guess, underrated guys in the league as far as development year over year. I think he's done a very good job developing into a good young player, kind of like Tyrese Maxey, or what we thought Terrence Mann was doing in LA. Like, I think I would thought he's probably one of the best young players developing right now. Jokic is confusing to me. But like that team generally, I'm like, there are moments where I'm like, they look beautiful, and there are moments when the train kind of like collapses. So that's why I chose Piazzolla's Nuevo Tango to describe them.
Interesting choice. And that's they can be. I like the analogy because I think we're so used to a certain style with the Blazers and a certain team, and they're different this year. They're longer, they're more athletic, they're almost more Toronto-like in the way they play. It's interesting.
That's exactly where my mind went. They're very Raptors. It's a strange moment. I can't recognize it. So anyways, that's the team. And then for the player, we just have to continue, really applauding Anthony Davis and his play, I think. So I just went straight for Purple and Gold. I went Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix. Like, this is just psychedelic music. This is just rock and roll at its finest. Like, I just don't understand. We're watching like this transcendent, like psychedelic per like performance night after night by Anthony Davis. And it was a nice little ode to the purple.
I like that. The connection there. And by the way, we talked about this last week. He bought into playing the five. He's having an certainly all NBA, maybe, maybe MVP, we'll see where things land kind of conversation. But this is the best he's played since New Orleans easily. Doesn't this feel closer to what everybody hoped for him?
Yeah, because you look at his skill set. I remember watching him in college, and I mean, it was shocking. And I feel like there are only a few players. I'm trying to think in recent memory. I'm cycling through my mind. Zion was shocking when I first saw him in person. I could not believe it, and I still can't believe it. I would say Oscar Tshiebwe right now, the current college player, where I'm just like shocked. Like, he reminds me, like, the way that he plays reminds me of like a Patrick Ewing type of, like, it's like a very interesting game that is like powerful and graceful and beautiful. But like Anthony Davis was just all around uber talented. So to see him, like I said, hit this like psychedelic st stage right now, where it's almost like, wow, like, I've seen you play in the finals. I thought he could have been finals MVP when the Lakers won. We talked about this. I mean, I thought it was a toss up between LeBron and him. And now he's playing at a level that's above that is, I mean, it's psychedelic.
Hey, credit to Darvin Ham too for, hey, we're going to run everything through Anthony Davis. This is going to work. And it has for them and for him. I mean, at least lately they've been better. And he's putting up, with 37 points in the loss to the overtime loss to the Celtics. But I mean, played brilliantly, and that loss wasn't on him. Well, he missed some free throws
Well,
in the
the free
frustration.
throw of the two losses recently. But once again, like, I think this is kind of, I don't know if you're following, I know you're following the World Cup because I know you love soccer. But like, how Argentina lost that first round, the first match, and then they're in the
Saudi
final.
Arabia.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of like the same type of thing for Anthony Davis. Like, you hear about that in a way, you might have like some close losses or whatever. If it happens early, then it gives you that strength later on to hit those. I mean, he was 11 for 13 from the free throw line, right? So like, you make those two, you would have been perfect with the free throw line. It was just the two that ended up deciding the game at that moment. So you look at maybe in 2, 3 months, see if you look back at this little stretch and see how it helped him get through it.
Yeah, it's I he has been I it's been one of the bright spots of the season. He's been truly special.
I think the last piece before we leave this is, I think that because Anthony Davis has hit this psychedelic stage, I think no one really has benefited more than Russell Westbrook. Because I think Russell now, like, there's absolutely, I haven't heard anything about Russell Westbrook for a very long time, which I think is actually a pretty good thing.
Yes.
in LA terms. So I feel like, and you're seeing the numbers reflect that. I feel like he's actually starting. We talked about James Brown in the Payback. I think he's like accepting that role, and he finally doesn't have media scrutiny on his every single move as if he was the thing that made the Lakers go. It's Anthony Davis, and I think Anthony Davis is proving that, and I think that is giving Russell Westbrook room to be effective.
Yeah, this wasn't the Russell Westbrook corner, but yes, not only that, I mean, it helps because they couldn't, the $47 million contract, they're still talking to him, but they can't trade him, really, right? Like, that's just too much. But remember, he's a free agent after this year, and I don't know what the market was for him. It wasn't very good. You know, he couldn't get traded this summer. I don't know what the market would have been for him before, but now, if you genuinely believe he'll come in and be your sixth man, and accept that role on, there's going to be a lot more teams interested. There's, if he's willing to do that and is serious, I mean, whether the Lakers re-sign him or he goes somewhere else, that opens up a lot more possibilities and just more years. He's not at a place in his career where he can be the number one alpha on a team that's going to do much. But as a sixth man, could be different.
Short list, I would take him. And so
Yeah.
I would definitely take. So I want to hear your thoughts though, Kurt, because we're moving to Kurt's corner, and I know we weren't supposed to talk about Russell Westbrook. It's an interesting conversation, but I want to talk about Kyle Kuzma, who, once again, another young player that I've been very impressed by his development. You hit it a couple weeks ago. You called it. You said, okay, what's the trade value? Now, there's been some more movement on that front, Kurt. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah, it's really built up. I think last week we talked a lot about, hey, do you re-sign him? Well, if you're the Wizards, what do you want to do? And I think we didn't touch on this aspect. He's got a $13 million player option next year that he will opt out of because he's going to make north of 20. He'll make a Jalen Brunson, I don't know, Tyler Hero kind of contract, right? What we didn't touch on was this. Does he want to be there? Because there's now a sense from other teams that there's a, let's just say there's been a lot of buzz, and other people have reported this, but if you're the Wizards, you've got to get that feel right now. Because if you don't think you can re-sign him, your hand's forced, Corey.
Yeah. No, that's such a great point. Do you think he wants to be there?
I've heard buzz that he wants a contender or brighter spotlight than he's getting in the nation's capital,
Yeah. Which is interesting, by the way. I just
By
want to throw that out
the way,
there.
every agent says that about their player. So, I don't know if he wants to be here. And, I don't know if he wants to be here, Corey. I don't know if he,
Yeah, all the costuming.
so we'll see where that lands. But let's just say there's been a lot more Kyle Kuzma buzz. And by the way, if he's genuinely available, if talk about a player who could help a whole lot of teams, guy.
Yeah, and then I agree. I think it's an immediate plus. I mean, because remember, with a lot of these young guys, it's about, I personally believe, managing ego to, and expectations. And I think that the time, I don't want to say, it's not Castaway. We're talking about Washington, D.C. But like, as far as the standings are concerned, it's basically Castaway. He was basically on a deserted island, in one of the biggest markets in the country, crying out, Wilson or whoever his name's on
Falling now,
the
I guess.
basketball
Yeah.
player, so it is interesting, like, career-wise, yes, the spotlight is definitely not in Washington. However, you think about, branding opportunities or whatever. I mean, Washington, D.C. is a huge market, right? So it is kind of like counterintuitive there. But I think that this banishment to the desert island of Washington, D.C. has been a good thing for Kyle Kuzma, I think, evidently, in both his play and in this ability to kind of, I personally think, kind of not just revitalize his market, but like put him in a position to like immediately impact a contender, immediately recharge a younger team, like get a bigger role. I think he's in a position where he could go a lot of different ways. Russell, like we talk about Russell Westbrook. To unlock the years left on it, like in his career, he's gonna have to accept a diminished role. I think Kyle Kuzma could go horizontal or he can go up. And that's an exciting place to be if you're his agent.
Yeah, exactly. Or him. Yeah, he's going to have options, and we all, man, especially with professional athletes, having options is everything. So,
Yeah, but I am curious though. Let's say he does love DC. Let's say, you know, that is a place he wants to kind of build, you know, something there. Do you think that there's any hope for them with this roster as it is currently constructed, built around Bradley Beal, Kristaps Porzingis, and him, Kyle Kuzma? Do you think, one, is there a room for him to accept a bigger role on that team? And then, two, how good do you think this team could be?
Maybe, yeah, no, maybe he loves living in Adams Morgan and just wants to be there, and he's all good, man. The thing is, in the East, like, even if I just even if you built a better group of role players around them, that's not a team that's going to spend into the tax necessarily. I think it would, I don't think it's on Kuzma. I mean, I think the limits are on, I don't know what, how good is Bradley Beal? Where does he want to, you know, what is, they've signed him. I mean, he's making his max. He's gotten paid, but where is he on the how far can you take a team thing? And you know, is Porzingis going to stay healthy? I'm just not sold that that team's if making deep playoff runs and chasing another ring, because he's got the one with the Lakers. If that's what Kuzma's prioritizing, I'm not sure that's Washington, but that's not necessarily always. It's still business, man. It's still about money, and it's still about where you want to live. So, you know, he said he'll have options, but I don't know that this Wizards team is. I think they can be better than the kind of crumbling recently current version, but I don't know whether they lost seven in a row or something recently, but I don't think they're threatening Boston and Milwaukee either.
Last 10, they're 1-9, currently lost 7 in a row, sitting in the 12th spot in the Eastern Conference. Yes, I agree with you. Their peers are the Orlando Magic, the Charlotte Hornets, the Detroit Pistons, and the Chicago Bulls. I agree with you. I am curious, though. I am curious to see exactly how this is going to settle. When do you think it would be resolved? If are we talking, February?
February 9th is the trade deadline. That's if he's not moved by then, the Wizards, they've clearly made a bet they can re-sign him this summer, because if they don't look, that's the bet. If you haven't moved him by the February 9th trade deadline, then you have got to spend the money to send him. Otherwise, you let him walk for nothing. And that's just, they're better management than that. Like if they don't think they're bringing him back, even if they're not going to get what all everything they'd hope for, you've got to bring back something.
Next up, let's talk about the Golden State Warriors. 2-12 on the road. Very interesting year for the defending champs, Kurt. It's very confusing, watching this team at the current moment. Why are they struggling?
It's such a weird thing, isn't it? Because like Saturday night, big ABC national game finals rematch, and you watch them beat the Celtics. I mean, shorthanded Celtics, but Celtics, and you're like, that's the team, right? Like, look at them. They can flip the switch. They can be back to being contenders. And then Tuesday night, they just get their doors blown off in Milwaukee. Just didn't compete in the second half, really. I mean, it was a 20-point game. It was, you know, we're going to talk about Charles Barkley getting a tattoo because like the game's not interesting anymore. Like it's an issue. And there's two things that seem to be, when I looked at it, that really break it down. A, mostly their defense on the road is just noticeably worse. They're 29th in defensive rating on the road. They're giving up like 13 more points a game. They're not getting stops for whatever reason on the road, the way they are at home. And I guess the question is really, is that just a focus thing? Is that just championship
Focus on the
hangover
defending
or
champs.
whatever about it? Or is there something more there? The other thing that, and I think this is also along those same lines, and I think it could be championship hangover. They've had some we were talking about the clutch. They've had some bad clutch losses. They had a 4-point lead with 10 seconds left and lost to Utah. Blew a 4-point lead in the last minute to a Charlotte team that did not have Lonzo Ball. I mean, well, not Lonzo either, but didn't have LaMelo Ball. Sorry. They scored 2 points in the final 5 minutes against the Heat and lost. Like, they're losing games in ways they shouldn't. And it's like that combination of not playing defense and not coming through in the clutch. Maybe it's just mental, but it's kind of. I just it's us what's it's at least raising eyebrows. Like, well, what's really going on there? Why aren't they focused on it?
Yeah, and to think you would never really, I don't think, in the same sentence, defending champs, dynasty, and lack of mental focus.
Yeah.
Those don't go together. So it is interesting the way that they started the season also with the drama around Draymond Green, Jordan
Yeah, well,
Poole.
I wonder if that plays in, right?
Another interesting
Is there a hangover
development.
from that?
Yeah, and then also I think with Andrew Wiggins, someone who has quickly become pivotal to this team. I mean, I think we kind of, I don't want to say underestimated because I mean, clearly last year in the run, Andrew Wiggins was like one of the most important players, both defensively, because he was one of the best defenders on that
Might
team.
have been their second best player in the finals.
That's what I'm saying, right? So, I mean, so all in all, like you understand how Andrew Wiggins not just accepted a role, but has quickly become part of the glue of the Warriors. He's missed a few straight games now, and they're about to embark on another long road trip.
Through the East, by
So
the
it,
way, yeah.
I mean, so it is. It's pretty interesting. I think there are a lot of different things, but Kurt, I mean, I just keep going back to the past couple of years where I remember when Steph was injured and we thought, wow, this team is terrible. Remember, and then last year too, pre-Clay, the Warriors did not look good. Remember that before Clay started coming back in January or halfway through the season,
Yeah,
like
around
they.
the All-Star break, wherever it was, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they were the best team in the Western Conference. I remember there was a moment where I'm like, okay, what are they going to figure it out? Like, yes, they have flashes, and then they ended up clearly going on a tear there. And we always did question, well, would Klay, Draymond, and Steph be able to just seamlessly pick it back up halfway through the season again, like old times they were able to? So I feel like the Warriors are kind of like right now, I don't know if this is the dying. Like this is like how franchises die or dynasties die, where like there's like these wide kind of just like pendulum swings of like excellent championship level play to just dismal performances. I don't know if this is what it looks like, but it is concerning.
Is I still think, like we talked about this, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, where you just, I'm not writing them off. Like they're
Yeah,
still,
totally. They're 500.
in fact, I wrote when I was writing about the Pelicans this week, and I'm like, if you forced me to choose who's going to come out of the West right now, I'd still pick Golden State. Nobody, Phoenix hasn't run away with it. I don't, as much as I want it to be New Orleans on some level because they're so much fun, I'm not sure if I'm ready to say they're there yet, and on down the line. But you've got to put yourself in a position so your playoff trek isn't brutal, right? And right now, 14 and 14, they just need to string together some wins and get themselves in a better position in the West. They don't have to get the one seed, but you don't want to be on the road for 3 rounds, man.
Yeah, I mean they're sitting right now at 10th, but you have to imagine that the Kings at 7, at 14, 14 and 12, they're going to drop out. Like you have to look at some of these people above them and think, okay, well, there's probably going to be some shifting pretty soon rather than later. But I am curious though, because we understand that, like Steve Kerr, I think the way he runs his team, it at least is kind of reminiscent of like Coach Pop, right? Of like
Oh,
Spurs
very
kind of
much.
like era dynasty type of. There was that moment where Kawhi Leonard became, one of the best players on the Spurs, right? And the shifting of that dynasty. And I wonder if we're watching something similar to Golden State right now, where, as Steph Curry gets older and like we don't know if Draymond's returning, that's a huge question mark. That big three, Andrew Wiggins has kind of like become like their Kawhi Leonard in a weird way, because I thought it was going to be James Wiseman. And it hasn't been James Wiseman, right? So I thought you could argue, oh, is it going to be Jordan Poole? He's taking steps forward, but he's not like franchise player, And I think Wiggins is like he was a franchise player, and then now I think he's becoming a bona fide franchise player in the few years if he continues to progress at the rate he's progressing. And like, so I think it's an interesting question of like, well, the Spurs post Kawhi fell apart, and after Tim Duncan's retirement. And I wonder if like we're witnessing a very pivotal moment in the dynasty, the health of the Golden State dynasty.
Yeah, I think we are. I think that they realize that this dynasty, as constructed, has crested the hill. And I don't sure how far or fast. I don't know what that downslope looks like, but their best days may be behind them. By the way, I thought it would be Kuminga. I
Yeah,
thought Kuminga would be the guy with the crazy athleticism who was Kawhi-like. And he's developed into a solid rotation player for them, and there certainly the potential is there for more, but he hasn't looked He hasn't looked Kawhi-like, right?
Yeah. I mean, no, very few people look quiet.
Yeah.
Well, let's make that very clear.
By
Very few people
the
look quiet.
way, Kawhi, I watched. I was at the Lakers. I'm sorry, Clippers. Celtics this week, and he had one play where you forget how big his hands are, and the
Oh, yeah,
rebound
really.
comes into a crowd, and he just goes up and claws the thing, pulls it out, and then leads the break and ends up finishing with a dunk. But his ability to just one hand a rebound that everybody else is doing this for changes the dynamic. Like, it's just a subtle thing that he can do that nobody else can really do in the league, really.
Okay, so now it's time for the fun segment, Kurt. Holiday season is here. You know, the 30 Rock, I went the other day. The tree looks
I would
gorgeous.
say, how does it look?
I mean, it looks very gorgeous. And then right across the street is that Saks Fifth Avenue, right? With all like the lights and the show. You know, it's New York is full on Christmas Hallmark movie. That's what it looks like. I'm curious because there are so many people traveling for the holidays. I don't know if you're traveling for the holidays, but if I were to visit you in California for a West Coast Christmas, you know, where would you take me? What would be the must-sees for the holiday season?
That's a really good question. I mean, outside of there'd be two parts to that. I think that A, you and I would go up to the Broad, check out the, I don't know if you've been to the
Oh
Broad yet
yeah.
up in
Yes.
LA,
Yeah,
and
of course.
there's great restaurants right around there. But it's funny when people come out here from other places, and you're a little different because I'd have to give you the choice. Most of the time I was like, let's go get really good, authentic Mexican food, because that you can't get that in other parts of the country. You grew up in San Antonio, which is a little more Tex-Mex,
Yeah, more Tex-Mex.
but certainly grows up around it. And but there's a place in Long Beach here called Lola's that is phenomenal Mexican food. Grandmother's recipes and stuff. That is just a favorite of mine. We could have some margaritas and hang out. Or do you? My neighbor, or we'll call it the neighborhood joint. We moved, so it's no longer literally around the corner, but we still go back there for birthdays and celebrations. It's still the family spot. Is a place called La Perolochia, which is a Italian, almost Roman style food. Really incredible cacio e pepe and more traditional Roman stuff. But they also do some Napoli pizzas, like, but real home style Italian food neighborhood joint. It's a truly a neighborhood joint because the parking sucks. So, like, most of the people have to walk
That's
there.
how you know.
It's almost New York like, where it's like, well, you can't park. So, it would be one of those two. I don't know. It depends if you're in an Italian or Mexican mood when you're out here, and we'll figure it out.
You know, I feel like we go one day and the other one the next day.
Yeah, maybe we'd have to do both. If, all right, I'm coming to New York. Are you going home for the holidays, or are you going to be in New
No,
York?
I'll be here in the city. So
Okay,
if
you're
you
right.
came
So
up
if I'm
here,
coming out to the city, which
yeah,
I haven't been out, we were just talking about trying to do this. Maybe that's this summer or something, because we miss
Oh,
being out in the
cool.
city. Like, if I'm coming out, what are we doing
Yeah,
for
I mean,
holidays?
so I feel like first and foremost, you know, first of all, food wise, I'm not like a huge restaurant guy in the sense of like I'm not gonna go, you know, go to I don't know some trendy website and find out all like the hottest restaurants in New York City and then wait in a line and go there and you know put a reservation 2 months in advance. That's not how I roll. So I would have to take you to all my hole in the wall spots in all the different
Yes.
boroughs. We just pick one. So like there's this place in Staten Island, and this is interesting because the ferry, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but in New York in Battery Park, there's this ferry that is like free. So, and you go right next to the Statue of Liberty. You get like the best view. So, it's the easiest and best way to look at the Statue of Liberty. So we would probably start there maybe and go take the Statue of, you know, take the ferry over to Staten Island, see the Statue of Liberty. And then there's this grandma restaurant, and I kid you not, it's actually like a grandma restaurant in Staten Island where like there's a neighborhood grandma who runs it, I guess, and it's like she's from Italy, so it's all her recipes. It's like the tiniest restaurant. There's like six tables,
Oh, we'll go
and
there.
it's like a random like hole in the wall spot next to the ferry terminal in Staten Island. And then there's like every week there's a guest grandma. I can't make this up. There's a guest grandma who comes in and cooks her like local cuisine from like Morocco or
Oh, yeah,
Greece or like wherever she's from.
those kind of spots are my favorite. Those kind of old, There was a Irish pub that was near me for years. And the wife of the owner was Sri Lankan. And once a year, when the mom would come out to visit the daughter and the grandkids and whatever, she'd come in the kitchen for a week and make like Sri Lankan curries and all this Sri Lankan food. It was so good. Like for a week, I'm like, I'm gonna be here eating dinner every night.
That's right. Yes. I don't know what it is, Kurt, but grandma food just tastes better. And
It
for
does.
like,
It
I
just
mean,
does.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's, I know it's that love is the secret ingredient, but I really do. I don't know what it is. But, you know, if you like Sri Lankan food, there's a two more places I probably would take you. One, I mean, one, there's this place I just went to recently, and it is like, it's probably the best meal I've had in months. It was up in the Bronx in Castle Hills. And same thing, it's a hole in the wall, maybe seven tables, and it's all Bangladeshi food, and
Ooh.
it is like the, I mean, it's literally, it's like the best. We ate like a feast, me and my friend, and it was like $20. So like, I would take you up there, and we would like go take the train all the way up to the Bronx, go to that restaurant, or we could go to this other spot in the Bronx that's Jamaican food. It's right underneath the subway line,
Love a good
right
job.
across from Yankee Stadium. So whenever I used to go to Yankee games, you'd get this Jamaican spot. They had the best oxtail that I've had in New York.
I love that you love oxtail because that's not something everybody eats, and I'm a huge fan. So,
So we probably, that's where we, I think those three, grandma food, Jamaican oxtail, and like jerk chicken and yams. And then we'd go get Bangladeshi food. So mostly in the Bronx or Staten Island. I don't know if that's exciting to you, but that's, if you came to New York, we'd go to the Bronx and Staten.
I mean, Staten Island is the hottest spot in New York now, according to Colin Jost. So, we'll.
Well, for all the latest NBA news, articles, and more, head on over to NBCSports.com/NBC, and sorry, slash NBA, excuse me, NBCSports.com/NBA. And best holiday season to you and your family. Is your daughter coming back?
My daughter is home from UC Santa Barbara now. So yeah, it's
Great.
been fun. It's fun to have everybody back under one roof.
Look at that. Happy holidays. See you
Yeah,
next week,
great.
Kurt.